This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The historic election earlier this month left us with some certainty. Joe Biden will be our next president. Republican Senator Tom Tillis won re-election in North Carolina, and Republicans will maintain control of the state legislature. But there are also some big questions on the table, like which political party will control the U.S. Senate? And will the Republicans accept American election results? Political analyst Ken Rudin joins us now to answer those questions and more. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, Donald Trump lost the election. He has not publicly accepted that, and he is working actively to undermine the trust of elections in America. And his legal team has filed several lawsuits. A lot of them have already gone down in flames. He invited two Republican state lawmakers from Michigan to the White House. What do you make of all this?
I think it's disturbing and frightening. You know, we keep talking about what Donald Trump has always said, that either he wins or it's going to be stolen from me. And he's proving it by doing what he can to undermine what the American people apparently said on November 3rd. And the fact is that what he's doing is he's trying to talk to legislators in these key states that he lost. I mean, he lost Michigan by 157,000 votes, which I don't see how a recount or anything like that could change it. But if he can convince the Republicans there, you know, election officials and state legislators, to not certify the results, because the deadline in Michigan is Monday, then perhaps the state legislators, which is Republican-controlled, would come up with their own slate of electors and go to the Electoral College saying that Trump won. He's doing this. He's trying to do this in several states. It's beyond contesting an election. Look, there was a recount in 2000. Al Gore, you know, had the recount and lost and accepted the results. Trump is coming up with reasons and trying to come up with solutions that would violate the will of the people, and it's nothing less than frightening.
Well, and that certification trick didn't work in Detroit, kind of as a test, so you can't imagine it's going to have much traction.
Yes, but remember, you know, the two Republicans voted to certify the election in Wayne County, which is Detroit, and then Trump calls one of them on Tuesday, and then within hours, she says, you know something, I changed my mind, I don't want to certify the elections anymore. The state election officials in Michigan said it's too late. But the fact that she's willing to do that and say that makes you wonder if there are other electors or election officials in other states who might go along with it. Do I think it's going to happen? I don't.
Right.
The fact that he's doing it or trying to do it is nothing short of disgraceful.
Well, here's the thing. It absolutely. And he is spending all of his time trying to figure out a way to overturn the will of the American people. And that's really keeping him busy, which is probably good news for the American people. But what happens once this really is certified? He's still there till the middle of January, 60 days left. And at some point, the results are going to be in and he will have nothing to do but think about other things. And I'm wondering, you know, what you expect during that lame duck period.
Well, he's already talked about, he already had a meeting about whether there should be an invasion or some kind of attack on Iran, and which basically just frightened his entire defense structure in the White House. He's obviously done nothing about the growing and frighteningly increasing number of deaths and infections with the COVID virus. I mean, he's not said a word about that. He has not met with any of the the virus task force. He's doing nothing about it. Remember during the election, he said, you know, after come November 3rd, nobody's going to hear about it anymore. Well, it's true because he's not mentioning it, whereas the country is frightened of what this winter is going to look like. So he's going to push through more, you know, confirmations of some cronies. He's going to make some of his more unimpressive appointments become civil servants, so it'll be tougher for Biden to fire. But basically, he's just doing everything he can to, you know, just mess up the House before he has to move out of it. And it's just ugly.
Well, we'll have to rely on the courts and possibly the military to make sure that the worst of it doesn't come to fruition. But what about the Republican Party now going forward? We've seen some erosion for Donald Trump over the last couple of days among Republicans, but not a lot, notably Mitch McConnell. How long can the Republican Party continue to attach itself to Donald Trump?
Well, as long as he remains the power and influence that he has, And he is, I mean, you think of great, you know, people who have great power and love within the party, like a Reagan or an Obama or Kennedy or something like that. This party is still under the spell of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, as we saw in Georgia, when the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, certified the results, Trump did a tirade on Twitter about him, and he got the two Republican senators, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue, to call for Raffensperger's resignation because he said the election was fine. Trump fired Charles Krebs, who's the head of the cybersecurity in the Department of Homeland Security about election security. He said it was done fairly. He fired him. So this, you know, I don't see these defections that you talked about. For the most part, these Republicans are just afraid to back off from him, afraid of the vitriol they'd get from him on Twitter and elsewhere. And as long as he's continuing to fight, you know, the results, people like Mitch McConnell and other Republicans are going to stay with him.
All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about what both parties are facing going forward, but I want to talk about the races now in Georgia. You mentioned them. What are we looking for that runoff January 5th?
Oh, my God. I mean, are they saying $500 million is going to be spent in that? Obviously, I mean, in case there are some people who don't know, the fact that there were two runoffs, Georgia law demands that a candidate gets 50% of the vote on election day. If not, it goes to a runoff. Well, both David Perdue, who had a big lead, but not 50%, and the appointed Senator Kelly Loeffler in a multi-candidate field, neither one got 50%. And so they're both going into the January 5th runoff against John Rossoff and Raphael Warnock. And both parties, you know, I think the Democrats are at a disadvantage. They don't have the African-American anger that they had, which was shown towards Donald Trump. And I think that the Republicans, look, both sides know that if the Democrats win both Senate seats, and Stacey Abrams is going to do everything she can to make it happen, if the Democrats win both, they control the Senate. It would be a 50-50 tie. Kamala Harris would break the tie. If the Republicans win one of the two, Mitch McConnell remains the majority leader. So both sides know how vitally important these runoffs are. And my goodness, I would not want to live in Georgia for the next 60 days and turn on a TV because you'll be bombarded by ads.
Let's talk about the Democratic Party now going forward. Joe Biden wins the presidency, but what does this party face with a centrist president and a rising left?
Well, that's a very important question. I think it's being underreported. Because, you know, yes, Joe Biden did win, apparently, but the Democrats lost seats in the House. They've lost at least 8. They may lose at least maybe close to 10 or 11. And they didn't pick up the Senate as they thought they would do. So a lot of progressives in the Democratic Party spent a lot of time keeping their voices muted because they wanted Trump gone. Now that Trump ostensibly will be gone, they will say, look, you know, Green New Deal, Medicare for all, free tuition, you got to move to the left. While there are other Democrats who say, my goodness, one of the reasons we did so poorly in November is that the Republicans painted us as socialists and we can't move to the left. So Democrats have this great ability to eat their own. And I think we're going to see a lot of that even before the inauguration on January 20th.
Well, it also is a question for the Republicans because it may be because they painted him a socialist. They were doing that in 2018 and Democrats won big. The real difference was Donald Trump, not on the ticket, not on the ballot in 2018. The Democrats do extremely well. And on the progressive wing, put Donald Trump back in the equation, they start to recede. Donald Trump's not going to be in the equation in 2022. Again, which way do both of these parties go without Donald Trump on the ticket?
Well, that's very important to point out. I mean, especially when Donald Trump is talking about running for president again in 2024, he basically freezes the field, and that makes more and more Republicans afraid to speak out against him. But basically, look, with Joe Biden as president, in the first 2 years of a presidency, the president's party usually loses seats. So the Republicans don't need to do much other than criticize Biden and try to win over those few seats. By the way, you talk about 2022. There was an article in the New York Times today that Lara Trump, the wife of Eric Trump, is talking about running for Richard Burr's Senate seat in North Carolina. 2022, which is, I can't believe we're talking about already, but it's basically around the corner, and there's going to be some amazing battles going on in both parties.
Would that I were in this chair for that, but I won't be. And that brings me to this, Ken. What a pleasure. And this is it. This is our last show together.
You know something? It breaks my heart. The fact that you're leaving and Donald Trump is staying, how is that possible? But, Frank, it has been an absolute pleasure being on your show. I enjoy our friendship. Yeah. And I'm going to miss you a tremendous amount. I think you're just a great talent and a great mind and a great human being. And I think I think WUNC was lucky to have you all the years they had you.
Darn right. Ken, well, let me say, Ken, I've appreciated what we go way back to our days on the mothership at NPR, and I've appreciated your sense of humor and your sense of understanding, depth, and also wit about what it is we're facing. Your contribution to the show has been enormous. I thank you deeply for that. And my brother, it's been such a pleasure knowing you in all of those places. We'll stay in touch. What do you say?
Absolutely. I was about to say I'll miss you, but hopefully you won't be gone.
Ken Rudin, political analyst and a good friend of mine. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.